Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we break apart the left's war on the American Constitution and juxtapose it with the parliamentary system in the United Kingdom. We talk about the state of the 2020 Democrat race, and we dive into all things Joe Biden. Before we get started, please leave us a five-star rating and a review, of course, and make sure your friends are also subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show. We are surging thanks to your support. Press subscribe, get your friends to do the same. And if you post you listening to this show on Instagram stories, I will do my best to repost them. Let's get going, everybody. We got a great show in store for you. Charlie Kirk's host of the Charlie Kirk Show, your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Welcome, everybody. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving weekend. This last weekend, I had the opportunity to travel quite a lot and kind of get caught up in some reading. And when I was reading the New York Times or Wall Street Journal or something, there was a quote from Pelosi. I can't remember exactly where it was, but she said something about, you know, this is our constitutional obligation to go after the president. And it kind of brought me down this kind of reflective rabbit hole, if you will, of just thinking, since when has the left actually loved the Constitution? I mean, in our schools, in our media, in the culture, the left is always trying to destroy the Constitution. In fact, they're saying it's outdated. They're saying that it has no relevancy, that the Constitution was written by racist people, that the Constitution is inherently evil. They see the Constitution is something that needs to be completely renovated and, you know, kind of run over. And so I thought about it. I said, well, do they love the Constitution or do they just love the parts that are convenient to them right now? And so I did kind of this more reflecting, and it kind of hit me. And then I started to read some articles about the United Kingdom system, because right now there's elections coming up in the UK, I think on December 12th. There's some elections coming up. Boris Johnson's Conservative Party is competing up against Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party. I think Nigel Farage's Brexit Party is also in the mix and is competing. So they have a parliamentary system, which is totally distinct and totally different than what we have. And so I'll explain exactly what a parliamentary system is and how this all kind of connects together. But my thought process of going through this, I think it's really important, is to illustrate how unique our system actually is here in America, why it's important, the roots of it, the brilliance of the founding fathers to create this system, and exactly what the Democrats want to actually create and what they're acting as if we have. So they are acting as if we have a parliamentary system. And I'm sitting here with Mr. Producer, who's going to be joining on this episode. And this last weekend also launched the Falkirk Center for Faith and Liberty at Liberty University with the great Jerry Falwell Jr. We'll talk about that later in the episode. So it's been a busy couple of days. And I hope all of you guys won your debates at your Thanksgiving meal because, of course, the Charlie Kirk Show that prepped you. And if you are anticipating seeing some leftists sometime soon, then go download the episode before this one and listen to it, because it is one of the best go-to guides of how to defeat the left.
We got some great feedback on that episode. There was a lot of people that loved that. I mean, some really foundational debates that you're probably going to have in the next week or 2 weeks if you talk about politics at all. So go back and check it out.
And so I'm going to dive into how the left hates Donald Trump so much they want to remake America and America's system that would allow them to replace and remove a president they hate. But first, did you know in some states, the week after Christmas sees the heaviest caseload for police? Break-ins spike every single year during the holidays because families are traveling and burglars know people have expensive gifts lying around.
I did not know that, Charlie.
It's quite amazing. And what's crazy is that only one in five homes have home security. Mind blown. Probably because most companies don't make it easy. I could tell you from firsthand experience, I bought these crazy things. They come in these boxes and people, it takes 3 months and you talk to someone halfway around the world and you just quit. It could be really difficult to use. Long-term contracts full of hidden fees. You have this installation fee and then you have the setup fee and then you have the second installation fee. Then you have the deposit fee and then you have the security deposit installation fee and astronomical monthly fees. Well, this is why SimpliSafe is my choice for home security. It's comprehensive, professional home security at a fair price. And right now, it is the best time of year to get a SimpliSafe security system. My listeners get a free security camera plus a huge discount on your security system. So if you guys sign up today, you guys get a free security camera. Did you know that SimpliSafe protects every room, door, and window with 24/7 professional monitoring? A smart lock and video doorbell defend your front door from porch pirates. Inside, an arsenal of sensors and cameras cover every inch of your home. And if there's a break-in, they can give you real-time video confirmation to police as it happens. Prices are always fair and honest, starting at just $15 a month. Right now, visit SimpliSafe.com/Charlie to get a free camera plus SimpliSafe's holiday savings. This offer is for a limited time only, and it's ending soon. Visit SimpliSafe.com/Charlie today. Protect those you care about. Visit SimpliSafe.com/Charlie. And so let's first describe and explain what a parliamentary system is, which is what the left is acting as if we're living under, which the United Kingdom lives under, and they're trying to almost make the argument to the American people that this is what we actually have. The U.S. has what's called a presidential system or a presidential republic. That's a system where the president is the head of the government as well as the head of state.
Wait, Charlie, I thought we had a democracy.
We do not have a democracy. In fact, I can go on endlessly about the differences between a democracy and a constitutional republic. And a democracy, basically, if 50% of the population believes something, it becomes true or can be put into action. In a republic, if 50% of the population believes something, that doesn't mean that your rights can be taken away. It doesn't mean that your right to speech, your right to property, your right to existence can ever be voted out. And in fact, it takes such extraordinary measures to amend the United States Constitution. It's possible, but it's more than just majoritarianism. It takes almost 66% at times of either states or people or institutions to actually approve amending a constitutional republic. So in a parliamentary system, the executive and legislative branch, as we know them, are one and the same for all intents and purposes. So in the United Kingdom, they have a prime minister, but that prime minister is chosen by parliament. Usually a parliamentary system is complementary towards a monarch. Usually that monarch has very little to no power, though. That monarch is usually just symbolic, and that's in recent times. It wasn't as much so 150, 200 years ago. Now, the prime minister in a parliamentary system is the head of the government and is elected from the controlling party in a legislature. So when a parliament is elected, they are electing indirectly the head of their government, someone who is given what's called a voice of confidence from the party or a coalition of parties constituting a majority that wins the democratic election. So just to give you an idea, if we just had a parliamentary system, Nancy Pelosi would be president after the Democrats took back the House in 2018. Horrifying. So whichever party is elected has the near absolute authority to enact their agenda. The role of the opposition party in a parliamentary system is to criticize and oppose the majority party. But more often than not, the party in power has all the votes they need to pass their agenda, and the prime minister is almost guaranteed to sign off on it, seeing as they're almost always a member of the same party with the same agenda. Now, the parliamentary system is, generally speaking, a system without gridlock because, as Bill Barr put it in his speech, the great Bill Barr, Attorney General of the United States, said in the Federalist Society, quote, "During the Revolutionary Era, American thinkers who initially considered inaugurating a Republican form of government tended to think of the executive component as essentially an errand boy of a supreme legislative branch." So here's what's so unique about the American system is that we have separate but equal powers in our government. It's almost as if, and there's a great quote from this speech by Bill Barr, it's almost as if when the media talks about separation of powers, they look at as the executive power as the bad guys and the legislative power as the good guys, as almost the oversight wing to take power away from the executive branch. But Bill Barr said this. He said, the first notion that politics is a free republic is all about the, quote, people's branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch protecting liberty by imposing restrictions on the executive. The premise is that the greatest danger of government becoming oppressive is from the executive and the perspective of executive excess. So that there's this knee-jerk tendency to see the legislative and judicial branches as the good guys protecting the people from the rapacious and would-be autocrat. That is the media's general presentation of the separation of power issues. And so basically right now, The Democrats want to diminish any sort of executive power, any sort of executive privilege whatsoever, just because they hate the president. Now, the Democrats change their constitutional interpretation based on who is president. Under Barack Obama, they wanted unlimited amounts of powers in the executive.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually an interesting point. A.G. Barr goes on to say in the same speech, he says, I'm in favor of a muscular executive. That's how he put it, muscular executive branch. But he was saying that nothing in Trump's tenure so far comes anywhere close to what Obama did in his. And yet,
where he said, I have a phone and I have a pen, and he was legislating through executive fiat. He was using government tools and government functions and government agencies to stamp out political opposition, as we saw in the IRS targeting scandal.
Well, and DACA is one of the prime examples of his overreach. He went on record saying, I can't do this. I don't have the executive power to do this.
And the Supreme Court should overturn it because it's incorrect what happened there. So basically, the Democrats are trying to use their singular piece of power in our government, which is through the legislative branch, as a way to fundamentally change our system. And Bill Barr continued in his speech by basically saying that the amount of undue compliance, the amount of – what's the right word I'm looking for?
So Bill says – Bill Barr says, AG Bill Barr, now resistance is the language used to describe insurgency against rule imposed by an occupying military power. It obviously connotes – that the government is not legitimate. This is a very dangerous and indeed incendiary notion to import into the politics of a democratic republic. What it means is this. Instead of viewing themselves as loyal opposition, as opposing parties have done in this country for over 200 years, they essentially see themselves as engaged in a war to cripple, by any means necessary, a duly elected government.
Right. And so they are trying to change the American Constitution because they basically want to give power to the singular point of entry, if you will, that have leftist representation. Now, if President Trump was a socialist, they would say, let's give all the power to the executive branch. But this kind of balance, separate but equal branches of government, as articulated in Article 2 of the Constitution, is so unique. So in separate but equal government, which we have in America, it has some positives and negatives. And so I'm going to make the Founding Fathers argument, and then I'm going to tell you why, inversely, it's actually worked against American freedom and liberty. And so there is a great quote by Thomas Jefferson who says, liberty is only safe when the legislature is not in session. Basically, he argued that the legislature should meet as infrequently as possible, that new laws should not be passed. And essentially, when you have this separate but equal system, it creates gridlock. Now, gridlock can be actually a good thing. Gridlock can stop really bad bills from being passed, like cap and trade back in 2008, 2009 was passed because of gridlock, and that would have been horrible under President Obama. Now, gridlock also forces you to compromise. It forces you to come to the table and find common ground. Let me tell you why this is a really bad thing, though. Well, let me actually reinforce first why it's gridlock is a good thing. It can stop socialized medicine from being passed like we see in Europe, or gun confiscation, or a quick erosion of freedom and liberty. The Founding Fathers feared a government that could do too much. But let me tell you why gridlock is really bad and why it actually works against it in two different ways. Number one, if you have as much gridlock as we've seen over the last 40 years, what's the one thing politicians can always agree on? They can always agree on graft. They can always agree on corruption. They can agree on the easy stuff, not the hard choices. So what they do is they'll keep on declaring endless foreign wars, growing the size and scope of government, expanding the amount of wealth and money that is concentrated in Washington, D.C., and just doing the easy thing to a bunch of lobbyists. That's the one thing you can act. How do you break gridlock? You do the cowardly thing. There's nothing courageous about that. That's why you've seen government grow over the last 40 years. It actually uses Thomas Jefferson's own argument against it. The other negative of gridlock is that when you need really big structural things to get changed, like building a wall, like deporting illegal immigrants, like instituting balanced budget amendment, the penny plan, approaching, you know, actually going after our debt and deficit, it becomes really hard to do those important things. So when you go in the wrong direction because of some of the bad choices politicians and the political class and the ruling class have put forward, it becomes really hard to correct course then. It becomes really hard to actually fix those problems because gridlock always gets in the way. With all that being said, I'm actually thinking it's a really good thing we have gridlock and a separation of powers and the type of system we have. If, God forbid, Elizabeth Warren becomes president of the United States and wants to pass Medicare for All, I think it's good to have a deliberative type process where you have to review the bills and maybe there would be a separation of powers. Maybe the Republicans would control the Senate and that she would, God forbid, control the White House. But as Bill Barr put it, the American presidency is something to be admired as an institution. It's unique. The system of which we elect a president and the powers that we give a president should not necessarily be curtailed under the false fear that that person is just a tyrant because he has some or she has some executive powers as being president of the United States. And understanding the constitutional thought process behind the creation of a presidential republic as opposed to a parliamentary system is so important. But first, I hope you guys enjoyed some of the sports this last weekend. My goodness, was that college football weekend one of the best. Auburn beat Alabama. Nick Saban got really mad But it was just great to see Auburn win the Iron Bowl like that. That was one of the most epic football games I've ever seen, 48-45. I was at Liberty University launching Falkirk Center, which will work in harmony with the work that we're doing at Turning Point USA and a lot of different things. And Liberty is now bowl eligible. And a lot of people, you know, had some very upset weekends when it came to college football. Looks like the Pac-12 championship, which is coming up this weekend, is going to be very important. Ducks play Utah. I think Utah is favored. That game is going to be in San Francisco. And if you guys want to get in on the action, go to podcastsports1.net for the rankings of the sports of the Podcast One betonline.ag challenge. But if you guys want to get in on the action directly, go to betonline.ag and use that promo code podcast1. That's betonline.ag and use that promo code podcast1. Huge NFL games coming up. We got Dallas at Chicago. I like Chicago. Baltimore at Buffalo. I like Buffalo. San Francisco at New Orleans. I like San Francisco to bounce back and to win that game. Kansas City at New England. I like New England, even though they're struggling a little bit. Seattle at the Rams. I like Seattle. So if you guys want to get in on the action, go to betonline.ag. That's betonline.ag. Use that promo code podcast1. Get in on the action. It's a great platform. Football season is coming to a climax. I hope you guys enjoy it. Betonline.ag. Use that promo code podcast1. Mr. Producer, there was a point you wanted to make about kind of the separation of powers and Attorney General Bill Barr.
Well, okay, the separation of powers, I mean, what's really important to see here is that Congress has an express role of making laws, of legislating, right? But one of the main points that we've made previously on the Charlie Kirk Show and that Attorney General Barr makes in his speech, which again is a masterpiece, we totally recommend you guys go watch the entire thing. It's brilliant. But he says, now Congress in recent years has largely abdicated its core function of legislating on the most pressing issues facing the nation. They either decline to legislate on major questions, or if they do, they punt the most difficult and critical issues by making broad delegations to a modern administrative state. So this is a really interesting point, right? So Congress basically punts on everything. They're not getting anything done, but what they do is they police the president. They harass the president. They use their advice and consent function that is outlined in the Constitution, which is totally their job, but they use it to bring it to a halt.
And so the other part of this that's really interesting, and Attorney General Bill Barr talked about this in the Federalist Society speech, is that the executive branch is overseen by Congress, but who oversees Congress? Do you know that there's no Freedom of Information request, which is a FOIA, to be able to actually oversee Congress? They're unfoilable. And so but as an adjunct to this, and there's kind of a fourth branch of government that has been created, and Bill Barr articulates this super well. My goodness, if he could have been Attorney General from the beginning, things would be a lot different. But we have in the Constitution three very specific branches of government, but there's a fourth branch of government that has been created that is arguably more important, not more important, but more powerful and has far more wide-reaching authority with no accountability whatsoever.
It's completely obscure.
And it's the bureaucracies. It's the IRS. It is the Department of Energy. It's the Department of Education. It's the EPA. They are the fourth branch of government. They're the largest. They're the most funded. They're unknown, unchecked, and unaccountable bureaucrats that have a tremendous amount of power. And I don't hear enough, especially from the Democrats, they want to continue to give unlimited amounts of power to this trillion-dollar behemoth Goliath that has unchecked amounts of capacity to do harm on our society. But I don't hear enough from Republicans, especially establishment Republicans in Congress, what they're going to do to actually shrink the size of the federal government in all this kind of fourth branch of government capacity that has at-will ability to be able to audit people they disagree with, to go after political opponents, and do things that could be particularly very, very harmful to those that might disagree. And so an originalist interpretation or a textualist interpretation or, you know, a non-revisionist interpretation of the Constitution would basically say that hosting power in a sole individual can be a good thing because you don't have to have death by committee. And look, unfortunately, as many people have said, the deck has been stacked against the executive since the mid-1960s. There's been a steady grinding down of the executive branch's authority that has accelerated post-Watergate. And Bill Barr made this point amongst many others. And what really is concerning is that now the Democrats act as if President Trump is subservient to the Democrats in Congress. Like, how dare you defy subpoenas? How dare you not come to Congress? Well, the way the media frames this rather dishonestly is that there's like a power imbalance, that the president somehow works for Congress. Well, he doesn't. The president works for the American people, but the president can do it as much as he pleases. If you want to get rid of the president, which they're trying to do, well, then impeach him. Well, it's not going to work. Impeachment is going to be dead on arrival. Impeachment will not have any sort of success whatsoever. But you have to realize that the Constitution was not written for the times. It was written to stand the test of time. The same problems that the founders envisioned this entire thing. The founders were so brilliant. The founders realized that there would be highly politicized, potentially dangerous aspects of the use of impeachment powers. And so what's really interesting in the United States Constitution, this is the constitutional illiteracy of the progressive left, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all of them. They're using this word bribery, right? Oh, Donald Trump tried to bribe the Ukraine president.
Drives me nuts.
But here's the thing. Let's pretend that he did, but he didn't. You do realize that bribery, the way that the Founding Fathers wrote it, was about our president being bribed, not bribing another president. The Founding Fathers worried that our president might be bribed by an external power, that our president might be under undue influence for a very particular reason. Not that our president was going to be trying to actually to protect our own national interest, to protect our capacity from potentially being compromised from foreign powers. So this kind of goes back to one of my guiding premises, that the left is doing everything they possibly can right now to destroy the Constitution whenever it serves them most. And this is kind of a lesson for all of us conservatives. We have to defend the Constitution even when it doesn't serve our own political interest. So we should defend the fact that there is a unitary executive even when we have someone in there that we might not agree with. And if we disagree with that, let's try to get that individual out of office. That the Constitution should be politically agnostic. It shouldn't be something that we decide to love when it serves our interest and hate when it doesn't.
You know, that's a really powerful point, actually, is this idea of if you don't like a president, you can it's a national election. Everybody can take part. In 4 years, you get a chance to choose another one, right? And instead, what we have is we have, like I said earlier, this resistance. And there's a really powerful fact that we uncovered in this speech. But it's basically, as of September of 2019, the Senate has been forced to invoke cloture on 236 Trump nominees, and this is in reference to judicial appointees. Charlie, maybe explain a little bit about what cloture is.
So cloture is basically overriding any sort of – rights is the wrong word, but any sort of capacity that – the privileges that the minority has. And so typically Senate rules were written in recent times. Again, this is nowhere in the Constitution, and Thomas Jefferson always believed the Senate should be a majoritarian body. You need 60 votes to be able to advance certain nominees, and anyone at any time in the minority party could have a hold on a certain nominee. Basically, a senator could place a hold on a nominee.
You basically hold the Senate hostage.
Yeah, and it gives credence to every individual of this elevated Washington, D.C. country club called the United States Senate. And they're supposed to have, you know, really good respect for each other and all this sort of stuff, and that's kind of eroded in recent times. And we've seen that in the Kavanaugh hearings where people were leaking on each other and going after each other. The cloture is basically running roughshod over the minority to try to actually get something done. And Mitch McConnell exercised Senate rules that were actually first implemented by Harry Reid. Harry Reid was the first one to actually break the filibuster. So the filibuster rule was try to get the 60 votes. In order to do so, you have to get cloture. It's a strict period of time. You're allowed to do only a certain amount of bills and laws until cloture expires. The Senate can do whatever they'd like. If Mitch McConnell actually decided, whoever's in the majority completely and totally controls the rules. But understand, we would not have Gorsuch or Kavanaugh or 150 circuit court judges across the country if we did not actually enact cloture and try to get rid of the filibuster.
It's been invoked. So this is the startling stat. 2.5 years of President Trump, 236 times over President Obama's entire administration, 17 times in 8 years, and W. Bush, 4 times. This is the second President Bush's first term 4 times. So it's a pretty startling difference. I mean, the House Democrats or Senate Democrats in this instance have completely tried every trick in the book to just grind this administration to a screeching halt. And so, you know, it raises the prospect. Can we expect a president in its current state to actually form a functioning government in the future? Because this has set a new precedent, right? So it's can you form a functioning government?
Well, and look, the left's vision is that eventually they're just going to run roughshod over all conservatives and all Republicans, and they're going to seek revenge and hope, and they want to control every single lever of government imaginable. So, wait, Mr. Producer, you have a thought?
Well, yeah. So a lot of us have learned in school, if civics, those of us who still learn civics in elementary and middle school and that sort of thing, that basically there was the fear of the monarchy was the guiding principle of the founders. This turns out to not really be the case, right? There's something called in English history, the Glorious Revolution of 1688, where the monarchy was essentially neutered. So there wasn't this tyrant of a king as we sometimes read about it. All the power was sort of in the parliament at that point. So the founders were actually, in our Constitution in 1787, they were reacting to a weak executive, and they reformulated it into a more powerful body, into a more powerful institution. So what we're actually having is an erosion of one of the highest evolutions of American political thinking. So to go back to a parliamentary system would be falling back, not advancing forward.
It would be a digression in every single sense of it. So to kind of tie it all together, Bill Barr had one final quote that I want to use. He said, "In any age, the so-called progressives treat politics as a religion." Boy, is that true. "Their quote-unquote holy mission is to use the coercive power of the state to remake man and society in their own image according to an abstract ideal of perfection. Conservatives, on the other hand, do not seek an earthly paradise." And look, the founding fathers understood that we are not going to create utopia here on planet Earth, that individuals should, of course, be allowed the freedom to seek communal gatherings, churches, so on and so forth. However, government is not going to be able to perfect our broken world. And however, the left, they look at politics as their church, as their synagogue, as their mosque. Because of that, they're willing to take the Constitution through a shredder. They have no sort of allegiance to the ideas behind the American Constitution. In fact, the ideas behind the American Constitution are directly corollary to the principles in the gospel of the Bible, dating back to people who believe in original sin and redemption in Jesus Christ. They're actually harmonic together. It's an admittance that people are broken by nature and that perfection cannot be attained through earthly means and that absolute power corrupts absolutely and you need decentralized systems. However, good people are necessary for a great country, as Alexis de Tocqueville said in so many different words. And this is exactly why we have to understand where the left is headed with this, because they are conveniently trying to co-opt and obstruct any sort of executive power or privilege because they hate Donald Trump, but they're going to change it on its head. They're going to change their tune completely if they get a Marxist in the White House. If they get a Marxist in the White House, they're going to want the legislative branch to have no power whatsoever if it's any sort of stopgap, if it's any sort of roadblock to them assuming more power.
I think what you're saying is really profound in one sense, that our modern debate is socialism versus capitalism or traditional American values versus sort of this radical progressive left that wants to sort of a structural transformation of what America is. But our founders knew that a utopian lie was just that. It was a lie. It was not something that was going to be achieved here on Earth. And so the fundamental difference between a socialist or a Marxist ideology and the American founding principles is one understands that it's a lie and it's never going to happen. The other does everything it can through the coercive power of the state to take your money, to take your rights, if they see it as benefiting the collective. This is the central divergent premise of socialism versus an American system. And this is why America can never be socialist, because our founding principles are actually completely incompatible with socialism's central promise.
That's right. And part of the Marxist lie is that somehow they can perfect human beings and somehow they can create a system that will eliminate all the imperfections and all the flaws of human beings. There is no evidence of this. In fact, it is an evil idea to try to say that we can perfect human beings just through changing certain systems around them.
As a matter of fact, if you want to try and do it, watch them rebel against it. Watch them completely fight the state once the state asks for two.
And inverse is the only way to then suppress that kind of fight is then to put a dictator in charge of a Marxist system, which happens inevitably almost every single time.
Or take their guns.
Exactly. So the holiday shopping season is here, and this year your gift can start next year's good habit with Quip. Quip is something that's sure to put a smile on everyone's mouth, because it's dental care they'll actually want to use every single day. That's why Quip is the perfect thoughtful and practical gift, with an electric toothbrush, refillable floss and toothpaste, all intentionally designed to make good habits simple. The Quip electric toothbrush has sensitive sonic vibrations and a timer with 30-second pulses to guide your routine, and the Quip floss dispenser has pre-marked strings so you can always use the right amount. Plus, Quip delivers brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months. So right now, just go to getquip.com/Kirk to save on gift sets to get your free first refill free with a refill plan. Join over 3 million happy customers and check everyone off your gift list right now with Quip, Q-U-I-P. So that's your first refill free at getquip.com/Kirk, getquip.com/Kirk. So there was a lot of news this last weekend. First, I want to share some fun personal news. Launched the Fall Kirk Center for Faith and Liberty at Liberty University, which will exist to explain the intersection of the teachings of the gospel with American foundational liberty and freedom. For example, we will dispel the myth that Jesus Christ was a socialist. We will push back against the ideas of the secular left that somehow if you are Christian, therefore you must believe in redistributive Marxist economics, and you must believe in unlimited amounts of government. And I think far too often young Christians are not given the correct arguments or logical reasoning for why you should believe in a constitutional republic or limited government or free enterprise capitalism, the system of which that has lifted more people out of poverty than any other system in the history of the world. So I launched that this last weekend with Jerry Falwell Jr., who we will have on a podcast at some point, at some time. He has an amazing story of how he took Liberty University to be kind of a small school in the hills in Virginia to a behemoth. I mean, that thing is amazing. They've qualified for their first bowl game. So I'm honored to be partnering at this center, the Falkirk Center for Faith and Liberty. Also this weekend, I found a clip on Twitter that now has gone super viral. I won't totally take credit for it, but I did participate in the viral spread of this clip. Did I not, Mr. Producer? I was one of the first guys to find this on Twitter.
I hadn't even watched the entire video yet. And Charlie,
this is not parody. This is Joe Biden. I don't even know what this is, but let's play tape. Play tape.
Let him speak for himself.
Play tape.
And by the way, you know, I sit on the stand and it get hot. I got hairy legs that turn that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight and then watch the hair come back up again. They'd look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
Yeah. So that's Joe Biden talking. Let's just put it that way. Okay. That's him talking about what? I'm not sure. About who? I'm not sure. I just want you to imagine, though, if Donald Trump, if there was a quote of Donald Trump saying that, it would be the biggest news story ever. Just to give you some context.
They would question his fitness.
This is back from, and by the way, I say this jokingly, but now we're supposed to get him the nuclear codes after that. That sentence made no sense. And he does this all the time. He thinks he's in Vermont when he's in New Hampshire. He calls Cory Booker President Cory Booker. He mixes up his own website. Remember Joe 33333333?
It's a really popular episode on the show.
He said that there was never a black U.S. senator, woman U.S. senator, even though there was one standing on the stage with him.
He said he got the one.
This is the front runner.
Yeah, he got the one endorsement from the only black senator, female senator in the United States history.
He's really struggling. And I mean, for the Democrats out there, and there's Democrats that listen to this podcast, you guys can do better. I happened to spend the weekend in Los Angeles where I did Steve Hilton's show, and I saw some of Mike Bloomberg's commercials, which I guess if you're trying to run like a Ross Perot, I'm going to spend $500 million to lose campaign, the commercials are okay.
It's good for the economy.
It's really bad for, it's good for advertising rates and political consultants are loving Mike Bloomberg. He has 100% of the political consultant vote. Political consultants love Mike Bloomberg.
And actually Senator Harris's consultants jumped ship. Actually,
she said it was the worst run operation that she's ever been around.
She's now a proud Bloomberg.
So we got a little bit of an update for you. In Iowa, the Real Clear Politics average has beat Buttigieg up 5.5 points. We did predict the Buttigieg rise. And one thing we didn't see as much, I don't want to say we got it wrong, we just didn't see it coming, which is perfectly understandable, but it wasn't adverse to what we said. Elizabeth Warren is sinking, unbelievably. I mean, so I make the argument that the most important person in this entire race, the person that holds the most power, is not Buttigieg, it's not Joe Biden, it's not Elizabeth Warren, it's not Mike Bloomberg, it's not even former President Obama, who's now being called a conservative by the Washington Post. Can you believe this? Barack Obama was called a conservative by the Washington Post. Did you see this, Mr. Producer? They had this big story that said Barack Obama, the conservative. Yeah, the guy that gave us the bailout, the guy that gave us Obamacare, that tried to do unilateral gun confiscation, that gave us Sotomayor and Kagan, is somehow the conservative. That shows you the state of the modern Democrat Party. But the most important person, the person that holds the most, that confuses me the most, I have no idea what this guy actually wants out of this whole exercise, is Bernie Sanders. I don't understand it. I do not understand what his plan is here, because he has to admit at some point he's not going to win the nomination and become president of the United States. That's just not going to happen. But he's dividing the angry wing of the Democrat Party. That's what I call them. I call them the angry wing. They're never happy. They're never smiling. They're always just screaming at the world, like old man screams at sky because Medicare for All isn't passed.
If you lived in this patriarchal horror show of America, you'd be unhappy too, Charlie.
Well, so here's the thing, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again because I think it's a very insightful point. If Bernie Sanders actually wanted billionaires to be deleted from our society, why doesn't he turn to an actual billionaire? I mean, how many billionaires do you think Bernie Sanders actually meets? Let's be honest.
Talk about missing an obvious opportunity to make a point.
But let's actually be honest. How many billionaires do you think Bernie Sanders comes in contact with? He doesn't raise money from them. He doesn't have them come to any of his events. He probably, I'm going to be honest, he doesn't probably meet that many billionaires. I mean, it would be reasonable to say that he probably meets more Bolsheviks than billionaires, but that's probably right. He probably has more people that thought Stalin did nothing wrong. By the way, if you're interested, there's like this whole kind of Stalin truther community out there. If you haven't seen it, there's a whole kind of Stalin did nothing wrong. Actually, I debated one of them once. We could try and find the tape. I'm gonna pause conveniently in a moment because if we find the tape, we'll insert it. If not, it'll just be whatever. But I was at University of Minnesota, and there was this guy that was trying to justify that Stalin did nothing wrong. Let's play the tape if we have it.
If the Soviet example was so great, why were people fleeing the Soviet Union for Western democracies and they weren't fleeing Western democracies for the Soviet Union?
Yeah, I don't defend the generation of the Soviet Union. As I was pointing for the Lenin and Trotsky, they pointed out that the revolution was international, that it was contained within a single nation.
It wasn't contained. You tried it in Afghanistan. You tried it in Ukraine. You tried it in Lithuania. You tried it in Latvia. You tried it in Zimbabwe. You tried it in Cuba. You tried it in Central America. You tried it all throughout the... What are you talking about? You tried it on the Korean Peninsula. You tried it in Kyrgyzstan. You tried it in Pakistan. You tried it in China. You tried it in Vietnam. You tried it in Laos. You tried it in Cambodia. You tried it in Indochina. What do you mean contained?
So if you didn't hear it, basically what happened, I'll explain it. Okay. So basically there I was going back and forth with this guy that was like, oh, this is all over exaggerated. The West really was trying to misrepresent what Stalin did, so on and so forth. And Stalin wasn't that bad. And Lenin wasn't that bad. It's this kind of Stalin truther community. But basically Bernie Sanders, what frustrates me the most is that everyone says, oh, he's so authentic. He's so real. Balderdash. Are you kidding me? I mean, balderdash Bernie. By the way, if you don't know what balderdash means, it means nonsense. But basically, he's standing on stage there, and he finally has an opportunity. He has the thing that he says has harmed America more than anything else, which is wealth creation. His whole argument is not about wealth generation. It's about wealth penalization and being punitive and punishing people that have wealth. So here's his big moment. There he is. It would be like if I was actually put on a debate stage next to Bernie Sanders, okay? Imagine what I would do. Would I play nice and say, I have so much respect for him, and just, I'd say, Bernie Sanders' ideas are horrible. It's like my whole campaign has been built around the idea that this guy's a practitioner of horrible and terrible ideas. So he's got his big moment. He's literally standing on a stage next to a legitimate billionaire, and he says nothing. He doesn't go after this guy. He doesn't say that it's sick and it's wrong that he paid his way to be on stage. I'm talking about Tom Steyer, of course, and quick facts, Democrats have twice as many billionaires running for president than Republicans do. They are the party, the ruling class party, the billionaires, despite no matter what they try to say.
Well, it's hilarious. They call them real billionaires. So,
So
they don't, now that they've got their own billionaires, they like them and they're real and Trump's not real. So.
Which is nonsense, of course. So anyway, all this being said, the most interesting person in the race that I cannot figure out is Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders might actually get Joe Biden the nomination, which would mean he would help reelect President Trump. And we were with a Bernie Sanders loyalist at Politicon, Secular Talk, Kyle Kalinske. Yeah, okay, that debate was a circus, but...
He's a dyed-in-the-wool Bernie.
Bernie or bust, would you agree?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I mean, it was not even a conversation, right?
Yeah, he can't stand Biden. He can't stand... I mean, basically anybody right of Buttigieg is too moderate for him.
But all things being equal, he said, I'm not going to put up with anyone except Bernie Sanders. Kind of makes me a little more scared about Bernie Sanders that he's actually even more radical than he puts on.
When you get a guy like Sanders who has, what is he? His Real Clear has him at 16.2 right now. So he's in second place. He's in second place by 11 points behind Biden.
No, but this is what I can't understand is what does he actually think he's going to win?
I don't think he thinks he's going to win.
Let's play this backwards.
Well, if he outlasts Warren, you put it together, he's at 30.
Let's work backwards, okay? It's the Democrat National Convention next summer. Do you actually think it's Bernie Sanders accepting the nomination? Like, if anyone actually believes that, please come in contact with me. Seriously, find some way to contact me at the Charlie Kirk Show. If you legitimately think that when this nomination comes around next summer, that it's going to be Bernie Sanders.
I think it's the existence of a person like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That has justified his entire reason for being, right?
He got the endorsement from Three Forces Squad, which, by the way, Three Forces under federal investigation for FEC violations. Right. Facts.
Well, I actually think that this is a very underreported fact, by the way, but I actually think that it's, you know, he looks at AOC's existence and says, I did that. I created the groundwork for AOC to be what she is today. And if I keep spreading this message,
you didn't build that. Yeah. I built that.
Exactly. To use the Obama thing. Yeah.
I built AOC. Ayanna Pressley.
Warren's all about that. You didn't build that. Now, too.
By the way, let's get into that in a second because I just think it's such nonsense. But sorry, finish the.
Yeah, point. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think he thinks that the more that he's out there, whether he wins, loses, or not, he's fundamentally reshaping the American political mindset. Why? Because he's got cult-like followers on every campus in America. And they are spreading his message and give it a generation. And the seeds that he plants now will become fully bloomed and, you know, destructive.
Well, yeah, but it's also because it's spreading because the professors have, you know, have laid the foundation, if you will, for this kind these kind of ideological rot to spread. I mean, they laid this – they put all the pieces in place to allow this nonsense to be able to metastasize. So here, let's kind of go into this. So I can't figure this out. I think Bernie Sanders is by far the most interesting person in the race. I'm just so intrigued by him because it seems as if he's more convinced that he wants to advance his revolution than anything else. But now he's having legitimate harm on the Democrat field. Now he is now he's having actual real measurable impact against anyone that I mean, Warren is peaking out because of Sanders having support. Buttigieg is peaking out, and Biden is having his no malarkey tour, biting his wife's fingers, which is just bizarre. If you think I'm kidding, he starts chewing on his wife's fingers. And so let's get a little deeper on some of the substance, though, that I kind of enjoy. So Senator Elizabeth Warren is echoing something Barack Obama said back in 2012. I just want to say, this used to be considered a gaffe, okay? You have to understand, politics has moved so far that things no longer matter, okay? You understand a gaffe used to be Mitt Romney saying only 47% of people pay federal income tax. You understand that used to be a gaffe. That was like, it's the worst thing ever. Anyway, so a gaffe.
They apologize publicly.
Yeah, and so a gaffe was also President Barack Obama coming out and saying, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. In fact, let's play tape of Barack Obama saying that.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we have that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
And now Senator Elizabeth Warren has recently echoed that. In fact, she tweeted this out not as a gaffe. She's wearing it loud and proud. She's wearing this badge of, you did not build that. Somebody else helped make you rich. You only got rich because of somebody else. If you got rich, you got it on roads that everybody else paid for. Play tape.
We want to build an America that works for the people, not one that just works for rich folks. You know, I have proposed a 2-cent wealth tax. That is a tax for everybody who has more than $50 billion in assets. Your first $50 billion is free and clear. But your 50 billionth and first dollar, you got to pitch in 2 cents. And when you hit $1 billion, you got to pitch in a few pennies more. Here's the thing. Doing a wealth tax is not about punishing anyone. It's about saying you built something great in this country. Good for you. But you did it using workers all of us helped pay to educate. You did it using your getting your goods to on roads and bridges all of us helped pay for. You did it protected by police and firefighters all of us helped pay the salaries for. So when you make it big, when you make it really big, when you make it top 0.1% big, pitch in 2 cents. So everybody else gets a chance to make it. And here's the thing. That's something that Democrats care about, independents care about, and Republicans care about.
So let's actually play out Elizabeth Warren's argument. And it's such a ridiculous argument. Well, that's on the roads that all of us paid on together. Well, if you're the business owner, you also paid into those roads. That's equally as much your roads as everybody else's roads. So to say that you didn't also contribute to that public good is complete and total nonsense. And so you also paid taxes along the way to use that. In fact, you disproportionately probably paid more in taxes along the way and did not get the equal or as much benefit as you paid into it or derived towards yourself.
And you employed a lot of people who paid into
right.
It.
So the payroll taxes and the property tax that you paid to the local community also went. I mean, a great example is at Turning Point USA. We have a couple offices in Phoenix, Arizona. We pay a lot in property taxes. Those property taxes go to local public schools. I don't live in Phoenix, Arizona. I don't have kids that go to those local schools, but I'm still participating in that because I own property. And guess what? If I don't pay those property taxes, they'll send the police and they'll shut us down. That's actually what will end up happening. Eventually, it'll take a long time to get there. But they could end up shutting off your water and shutting off your electric, and you could not get approvals. And if you don't pay your property taxes, you could potentially be in violation of the law. And this argument from Elizabeth Warren is, well, you didn't build that. Everybody else made that happen. Hold on. If that is the case, why isn't everyone successful then? If that's the case, why isn't everyone able to do it? If everyone pays into something, why do only a few amount of people be able to succeed? And guess what? The top 1% pays nearly half of all the federal income taxes, according to CNBC. According to CNBC, the top 1% pays nearly half of all the federal income tax, which is absolutely against what Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren always talk about. And so, look, this Democrat primary is so perplexing to me because you have two billionaires running that are spending extraordinary amounts of money that are being treated with kid gloves by the rest of the primary that's trying to start an economic revolution against billionaires, which is stunning and extraordinary to me. Then you got Pete Buttigieg surging, and he's one of the most unimpressive, uniquely uninspiring individuals ever to run for the presidency that I've ever seen. He's trying to recapture black support because it is South Carolina Black Coalition. He had pictures of Kenyan children on his Blacks for Buttigieg flyer. While all this, President Trump continues to surge in the black community, where three polls have now shown that he has 34%. Three polls have now shown that he has 34% in the black community, something just that is being conveniently ignored by the media.
Just to put that in perspective, in the modern political era, the top performing Republican presidential candidate with the black community was Bob Dole.
14%.
14%.
Right? But why did Bob Dole get 14%? Because he actually went into the communities and talked about economic opportunity zones, enterprise zones. He actually made the effort. And for far too long, Republicans have not made the effort to try to win the black vote or try to win the Hispanic vote. And now we have seen President Trump go after the black community in an amazing way and to say, what do you have to lose? And pass criminal justice reform, opportunity zones, lowers the black unemployment rate, lowers the black poverty rate, and deliver real results for the black community.
And just so everybody understands, this is a generational opportunity, maybe a once-in-a-generation opportunity to recapture, you say this all the time, Charlie, that demographics are not destiny, right? So there's a lie going around that means that believes
that somehow your skin color should dictate what you believe, which is nonsense.
And by the way, happy to admit that the polling would indicate that people of color tend to vote for Democrats. But that is temporary. Ideas matter. Values matter. And communicating the message matters. So there's a reason why Hispanics in Texas vote more conservative than Hispanics in California. It's a cultural difference. So the point is, demographics are not destiny. That's not true. That's not true that the color of your skin determines your vote. And we have a real chance at absolutely dismantling one of the strongholds of the Democratic Party, which is the black community in America that has voted basically 90% Democrat. And if this happens, just so everybody understands, all the voter models go out the window.
That's exactly right. Everything changes for good. And so Joe Biden is still aimlessly trying to figure out what state he's going to win. And by the way, so Joe Biden is still the front runner in states like Nevada and South Carolina. But hey, once Iowa happens and New Hampshire happens, this race is really going to tighten. But you heard it here. Someone's still going to surge. I thought it was going to be Pete Buttigieg late. He has surged way earlier than I thought. Democrat voters in Iowa and Republican voters in Iowa in the caucus, they are notoriously picky. They're notoriously tough buyers, meaning they'll kind of stay undecided towards the end and they'll decide that very night. So make no mistake, someone can still surge. I don't think it's going to be Andrew Yang. Don't think it's going to be Tom Steyer. I don't think it's going to be Castro.
It's not going to be Harris.
She's a disaster.
The piece
right
in New York Times just ripping her campaign apart was pretty much the nail in the coffin.
And Bullock dropped out. Maybe Klobuchar, but my goodness, if Klobuchar,
she shook like a leaf at that last.
Yeah,
debate.
I don't know what that was really all about, but she really reminds me of like Midwest Hillary. That's what she reminds me of. She's like Midwest Hillary Clinton.
That's willing to go on Fox.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, all things being equal, we'll keep a close eye on this, and we have another great show where we are going to expose the ideas behind Greta Thunberg. Is that how you say it? Thunberg or Thunberg? Greta.
There you go. Greta.
Greta the girl.
Sufficeth.
Greta the global warming girl. There. That's who we're going to expose the ideas behind tomorrow on the Charlie Kirk Show. It should be quite fun. And for those of you that want to get involved with Turning Point USA, the nation's largest and fastest growing conservative student organization fighting for free markets and limited government, American exceptionalism, on campuses all across the country, go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. We have a massive event coming up, our Student Action Summit, where we have speakers such as Sean Hannity, Ben Shapiro, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Glenn Beck, Candace Owens, Dan Crenshaw. I will make an appearance and many others. It's not too late to apply. So go to tpusa.com/SAS. That's tpusa.com/SAS. It's going to be held in Palm Beach, Florida. The biggest speakers of the entire conservative movement will be there. So get your spot confirmed, tpusa.com/SAS. Support our sponsors and please type in the Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Press subscribe, leave a review, and give us a 5 5-star rating. We appreciate the support. Get involved with Turning Point USA. If you are a student, if you're an adult, pitch in some money and get your son or daughter, niece, nephew, daughter, or granddaughter involved with what we're doing, tpusa.com. Thank you so much for listening. We got a great episode planned for you guys tomorrow. Download a couple episodes and you guys are traveling in the car or commuting. Even the ones we did last week during Thanksgiving are kind of evergreen. They'll last for a long time. So go back in the archives. Press subscribe if you haven't already. Download the episode. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Till tomorrow, this is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Talk soon.